Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach Cindy Chavez here. Today is Wednesday, November the 14th, 2018, 4 p.m. New York time, 1 p.m. Los Angeles time, 9 p.m. London time, and doing my math quickly, that would be 8 a.m. Sydney time. So good morning, Sydney, Australia. I don't know how many I can add to that. I'm going to see how many cities I can do all at once and remember them all. Yeah. But we're back here for another podcast talking about the next segment, if you will, in our ongoing exploration of Neville Goddard. We've had so much fun doing the last few books, and they've all been relatively short books that we decided we'd go for a magnum opus this time. So we're going to take on The Power of Awareness, all 27 chapters of this monster. And we're going to have a blast doing it. So we hope that you join us along the way and have as much fun as we do. And Cindy, I mean, I have to give us credit. We deserve a little pat on the back for taking on a monster project like this.
Right? Right. It's like, what's the over and under on how many months it takes us to get it done?
I don't know. I haven't checked with Las Vegas on that, but I will put in a request on that.
I said earlier, we were discussing, what we say, welcome, Happy New Year 2021. Might take a while.
It could.
I'm dominant, though. I'm ready.
I've gotten into it. We were talking about this morning how I've really become, I can't say I'm a Neville addict yet, but I've become very interested in him since we've been doing this stuff. Up until you first introduced me to him last April, I had, like what you described today, I had sort of like a quasi, yeah, I think I know who he is kind of a thing. And yeah, he's the guy who does the Bible verses, and I'm not really interested in all that. But you've turned me around on that. This guy's got some, he's got game. He's got real game, and that's good.
Yeah, I think so too. And I, like, you know, I've read Neville and read Neville for years, but when we get into this book, I'm not sure where it's going to go. I just know it's one of his main books. When you search for him, this one comes up. Pretty sure I've read it before, but like I have them all in a collection. You know, I didn't buy them one at a time. So I've read most of what's in this book. And a good friend of mine, she told me once the other day, she said, look, cause we're both like really like Neville. She said, I have some Neville that I haven't read yet. I said, seriously, you? And she said, yeah, because it's like, I don't want to finish it all. I want to hold some out. So there'll always be some new Neville that I haven't read.
That is good. Yeah. Well, hey, that shows just how enthusiastic she is about the topic. And that's a good thing. Yeah. So,
well, I was reading a review of a book. That we just bought to read, a fiction book, and it said, the review said, this is one of those books that you'll sail through and then slow down when there's only like 40 pages left. And I laughed because I thought I was the only one that did that. You know, I'll race through a book that I love and then I start feeling a little sad. It's like, oh, I'm almost to the end. I'll put the book down, go make a cup of tea. It's like stretch it out.
Well, maybe
Neville's like that a little bit.
That's kind of like the opposite of what like the Harry Potter books were, because you got to the end of one of the books and you couldn't wait for the next one to show up.
The next one,
right?
Right.
You know, because you knew the next one was coming. Now, I mean, Neville doesn't actually have an ongoing storyline like Harry Potter series had, so I guess it doesn't have that advantage. But wouldn't it be cool if it did? Wouldn't it be cool if there was like, you know, the Neville Goddard character who goes to Hogwarts or something?
Right. Well, it's funny, you know, we're big Game of Thrones fans over here. Ah. And my husband.
She gets to say that. Hooray!
he had watched, I think, the first episode when it came on HBO of the very first season, when it came, like live, you know, when it first aired, and realized that he wanted to read the book.
Ah.
So he read the book. He started reading the book and he just raced through the book and it was fantastic. And he wanted the next one. So he got the next one and he finished the next one and then realized that those two books were written like, I don't know, 8 years apart or something. And he realized, oh no, like, you know, he read it as soon as it came out. It's like, oh no, the new one could not come out for years. It's like, and of course, all of us Game of Thrones fans are in that predicament now because the last one is still not released.
So right.
Thankfully, we have all of the Neville books.
We do.
Unless he starts writing from beyond, which I wouldn't put it past Neville.
I wouldn't rule that one out, no.
Neville is the one who manipulates time, changes the past. So wouldn't it be funny if like a year from now we discovered a new Neville book? Where did this go?
Well, the funny part will be there's a somebody who has a series of websites up that we refer to. One website for each book that he put out, right? And I can just imagine being the owner of those websites, because it's like a collection under one person's roof, so to speak. I can just imagine that person waking up one day and finding a new website listed there, thinking, where'd that come from?
It says, he gets an email that says the URL needs to be renewed.
Yeah, like, right.
The domain needs to be renewed. It's like, wait, that, what's that? I never heard of that book.
Surprise.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun. Well, I had fun with the last one, and I'm ready to have fun with this one. And when I opened it up and saw the first chapter, I got really excited because we talk about this a lot, but it's one of my favorite topics. The chapter name is I Am.
Yes, I Am. That's where any good philosophical inquiry starts anyway. It starts with what's your basic? What's your foundational principle? I Am has to be, for anything that's existential, for anything that's spiritual, that's where you have to start. You have to start with that. Otherwise, who are you? You're not anybody.
Everything that we experience in life is directly connected to our sense of identity. So this question, or this, the answer to this question,
yes,
who am I, is super important. And so Neville's going to take us into the chapter beginning with I Am. But first I want to ask you, I'm not sure what you want to do in the afternoon as far as announcements. We probably have some.
We do. This is a good time to do them, so let's get them done. Most of our regular listeners know them by heart by now, so you know, if any of you want to call in and make a recording, I'll put you up doing this instead of me. But basically it goes like this. If you're not a subscriber, what are you waiting for? Come on, join the club. And it's a great club. We got lots of people, hundreds of people listening to every single episode for good reason, because they're fun. We have fun and they have fun listening. So, you know, become a subscriber. The steps are really, really easy to do. I mean, anybody who has a smartphone can do it. But if you're a little bit unclear how to do it, we're putting links now into all the descriptions of the podcasts, both the live streams like we're doing with the Law of Attraction Changed My Life group, and also the recorded podcast episodes. So no matter where you're seeing this, almost anywhere you're seeing this, you're seeing links that you can use to either subscribe using an Android phone or subscribe using an Apple device. And then it just kind of walks you through it. But just on the off chance that you're seeing a description, you don't see links, just go to the homepage of our website, loatoday.net, and you'll find all of the links right there. Really easy to do. And then once you're a subscriber, share! Share with everybody. Tell everybody they can get their daily dose of happy through LOA Today, because, you know, that's what I love the idea of an entire planet of happy people just getting their daily dose and going out and attracting and manifesting like crazy. I mean, I can barely even imagine what that's like, but I know I'll like it. That's for sure.
Exactly. And our energy entrains to each other.
Yes.
So when we are carrying or experiencing zest.
Zest.
Right?
The morning.
For life.
This morning's word was zest.
it rubs off on other people. I think probably every one of us has had the experience or knows a person that we would say, oh, I love being around that person.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I'm around that person, I laugh, I have fun.
Right.
They always have good energy. They always are smiling. They're always feel so good to be around them. Well, that's what we want. We want people to say that about us. We want people to say that about you. Right? We want to all lift the vibration of the planet one person at a time. So,
and by the way, speaking of vibration, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that those flowers back there are gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
I've been packing my office with all these flowers that are all over the house now from my wedding. So they are beautiful, and I realized that the temperature outside has dropped. We are in the 30s now.
Wow.
Which means that the heater is on in the house.
Yeah.
And I have this story. When my sister lived in Australia years ago, on the anniversary of our mother's passing, the first year, she was there, I was here, and so she sent me a huge bouquet of pink roses just to say, I'm thinking of you today on this anniversary. It was really beautiful. They were delivered. They were amazing. I put them on the dining room table, and it was in February. The next morning when I came out, they were all, they had lasted precisely one day. And I found out it's because where they were sitting, the heater was just blowing right on them. And you know, when you go to a florist, all the flowers are in a cold box, right?
Right.
And then they were just sitting there with this hot air blowing on them.
Yeah.
And so it hit me yesterday that the heater's coming on, all my flowers.
Get them out of there.
I put them all in here today. So as I'm in my office, I'd be surrounded by a bunch of them. So thank you for noticing them. They are
gorgeous. They really are. And by the way, for people who are wondering what we're making a big deal about, I'm in Connecticut, so we're in the 30s also here. That's not a big deal. It's a little bit lower than normal for this time of year. Cindy's in Louisiana. This is like a big deal to be in the 30s down there. So, yeah, that's why we're mentioning that.
Yeah. We actually went to a new restaurant, tried a new restaurant, and it was open. So you walk in, and the host is standing there, and there's no door. It's just open to the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, and it was like in the 40s, and the host had a coat on and was drinking hot tea.
Right.
The table for two, and we were like, well, only if it's warmer in there.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, we're not used to this. So.
No. That's all right. All things will pass, including this one. And I'm sure that you'll be back in the 60s very soon, maybe even higher. But today, you're in the 30s.
Right.
So welcome to New England.
Welcome. Thank you. I'm getting a little experience. All right. So I wanted to read in the paper book, in the hard copy version of this, is a quote that I'm not sure if it's Neville or if it's the person that compiled all these books. We're reading from the copy of The Power of Imagination, hard copy. But I loved it, so I thought I would share it. It says, "This book is to reveal your infinite power against which no earthly force is of the slightest significance."
Wow.
"It's to show you who you are, your purpose, and your destiny." I thought, wow.
That's
kind of a powerful statement.
Yeah.
So I was saying to Walt before we started, I imagined, you know, some mysterious heavenly being, you know, handing this book to me, the magic scroll or something.
Well, it was Neville. It was Neville who was handing it to you.
it was Neville. All right, so I'm going to switch to where I can read from the screen. So
okay.
First chapter. And the chapter online has a little part that's not in the hard copy.
Yeah.
So I think this is very interesting.
Yeah, everybody wants to put their own little 2 cents worth in, which actually makes sense to me because we put more than 2 cents in. We put about $50 in every week. You know, so.
Yes. So it says the chapter and the book, both titled The Power of Awareness. Leave the mirror and change your face. Leave the world alone and change your conceptions of yourself. I am. All things, when they are admitted, are made manifest by the light, for everything that is made manifest is light. The light is consciousness. Consciousness is one manifesting in legions of forms or levels of consciousness. So we're off to a running start with that.
Yeah.
But I love this, leave the mirror and change your face. And mm-hmm. I often explain that in my viewpoint, the whole universe is just a reflection of whatever our thoughts about ourself are. And in the same way that when we look in a mirror, you know, when we're getting ready and we look in the mirror and we check, is my hair okay? And do I have food in my teeth or whatever? If our lipstick is smudged or something, we don't fix the mirror. We go fix our lipstick. We
true.
Go fix our hair.
Very true.
We go brush our teeth, whatever we need to do. And so it's in the same way when we see what's going on around us that's reflecting back to us our identity, who we are, we only have to fix us. We only have to tend to ourself, to our I am statement, and everything else changes. So Neville says, the light is consciousness. Consciousness is one, manifesting in legions of forms or levels of consciousness. There is no one that is not all that is. For consciousness, though expressed in an infinite series of levels, is not divisional. There is no real separation or gap in consciousness. I am cannot be divided. Ooh. I may conceive myself to be a rich man, a poor man, a beggar, or a thief, but the center of my being remains the same, regardless of the concept I hold of myself. At the center of manifestation, there is only one I am manifesting in legions of forms or concepts of itself, and I am that I am. Now, doesn't that sound like the multiverse?
Yeah.
Or the idea of parallel universes?
Mm-hmm. But it also sounds like Genesis in the Bible. Because Genesis starts off with the same kind of conception, expressed slightly differently, but it's a similar kind of idea that there is just one. There's I am, and that the I am is the I am. And he even goes a little bit further than I would. He says there is no separation or gap in consciousness. I agree with that. I am cannot be divided, and I think that's true, but it requires very special understanding, I think. And then he says, I may conceive myself to be a rich man, a poor man, a beggar man, or a thief, but the center of my being remains the same regardless of the concept. So he's reiterating the idea that we are all connected in this one way. But in that same paragraph, he does differentiate. He says there are rich men, there are poor men, there are beggars, there are thieves. There are all different people, but they're all one. And that's the way I like to look at it, too. I think of it as both going on at the same time. We are all part of the same source. But we are also individual. We are both.
Right. So what you're saying, when you hear that, you hear that we are all one and all of our differences are just different manifestations of that same one.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And the one that can be a little bit tripping is the one that says, I am cannot be divided. And if you understand that in terms of I am cannot be individuated, that's going to confuse you. But if you understand in terms of identity cannot ever be cut off, can never be sliced apart, then it starts to make much more sense. Because now you're not trying to stop differentiation. Instead, you're trying to end the idea that you can be separated from the whole thing. And that, to me, is the real strength of it.
Anyone that's familiar with A Course in Miracles will recognize that to be a concept there.
Right.
That we are all one, mm-hmm. and that we can't undo that. We can't not be part of the one. And what I see too, and I guess we're going to get there, but that these are all just sort of stories, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I am a poor man. I am a beggar.
Well, yeah, that's where the multiverse concept comes in, right? Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So he says, I am is the self-definition of the absolute, the foundation on which everything rests. I am is the first cause substance.
That was a phrase.
I am is the self-definition of God. Well, we know that if we believe these verses. I am has sent me to you. I am that I am. Be still and know that I am God. And it kind of goes back to the way we ended the last book with Neville saying, well, you know, you and God are the same thing.
Interesting phrase, too. The phrase, I am, is the first cause substance. Cause substance.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never heard that phrase before. So I
think it's interesting because we're going back to exactly what you just said about this being the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
it really is.
Whatever you're creating, your I am statement is the beginning of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I am is a feeling of permanent awareness. The very center of consciousness is the feeling of I am. I may forget who I am, where I am, what I am, but I cannot forget that I am. The awareness of being remains, regardless of the degree of forgetfulness of who, where, and what I am.
And that section right there, that little paragraph is him, I think, this is him making more clear the idea we are all one, we are all individuals, but we are all connected and we never lose that connection. So on those occasions where it feels like we have lost connection, what's really happening is, as he says it right here, let's see, where is it? He says, I may forget who I am, where I am, what I am, but I cannot forget that I am. The forgetting who I am, where I am, what I am, that's the losing connection. It really isn't losing connection, but that's what we call it. We call it losing connection.
It's important that you're bringing this up because I recognize now that you say that we could read this as very literal to the person I am.
Mm-hmm.
or a person I think I am, right?
Yes.
Of now, like mm-hmm. forgetting where I am. It's like, wait, where am I? Okay. But in reality, I think you're hitting it, the nail on the head. He is talking about when we forget that we're connected to source.
Right.
When we forget who we truly are at our core. And that's another thing that, as you know, I'm reading it, I'm recognizing A Course in Miracles in there, because that's one of the things that you'll hear when you read that material, is that we've just forgotten. We've forgotten that we're unlimited beings.
Mm-hmm.
We've forgotten that we have infinite power. We've forgotten those things. But we don't forget that we are. We know that we exist,
mm-hmm.
right? The awareness of being remains, regardless of the degree of forgetfulness of who, where, and what I am. So at our core, we do know there's that connection. Is that how you read that?
That is how I read it, and to me that's also the proof. The fact is, despite all of our efforts to forget about who I am and so forth, I still recognize the connection, because I recognize that I am. That is the connection right there.
Yeah.
So any doubts to the contrary you can put aside, because unless you're willing to say I'm not, you are. And even if you're saying you're not, you're probably going to end up saying I am anyway.
I am is that which, amid unnumbered forms, is ever the same. The great discovery of cause reveals that, good or bad, man is actually the arbiter of his own fate, and that it is his concept of himself that determines the world in which he lives, and his concept of himself is his reactions to life.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you are experiencing ill health, knowing the truth about cause, you cannot attribute the illness to anything other than to the particular arrangement of the basic cause substance, an arrangement which was produced by your reactions to life and is defined by your concept, I am unwell. This is why you are told, let the weak man say, I am strong. For by his assumption, the cause substance, I am, is rearranged and must therefore manifest that which its rearrangement affirms. This principle governs every aspect of your life, be it social, financial, intellectual, or spiritual.
Now let me bring something up, because again, he's using the phrase cause substance again, which is a phrase I've never heard before. I can kind of piece together what he means by it, and it's in fact a piece together phrase. It's two words hyphenated. Cause substance, the two pieces of it, cause, that's the part where we're trying to identify what's the motivating, what's the driving force that makes me me, what's the driving force that makes the universe what the universe is. And substance,
right.
I think substance is referring to what we would call source energy. I think it's referring to what has been, what is the driving energy that is the power that creates worlds. It's the power that creates everything that goes on.
Right, and I'm curious how it connects to what we were reading in the last book we read, where he talks about the subconscious. You know, where he says the subconscious is the thing that's creating your reality,
right.
Whatever you're experiencing, right?
Yep.
So if he's talking about, of course, when I hear cause, I mean, he's talking about cause and effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the cause substance. This is the thing that's causing cause substance. So how are we going to hear that connects to the subconscious?
We're going to hear pretty quick, I think. Yes.
Yeah. So he says, I am is that reality to which, whatever happens, we must turn for an explanation of the phenomena of life. It is I am's concept of itself that determines the form and scenery of its existence. So it's interesting, the idea of, he uses this example of I am unwell,
mm-hmm.
and talks about whatever, however we arrange that I am statement, that's what starts showing up. And I think about a story that I've told you before. I've probably told it on the podcast, but when I was a little girl, I was painfully shy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my story then would have been, I am shy.
Right.
And when people would say hello to me, like when I was really young, 3, 4, 5 years old, I would be out with my parents and people would wave at me. I was really, really small. I'm still small, but I mean, at least I'm human size now. I was like 3 pounds when I was born. So when I was walking around, I was like the size of a normal, like 6 month old, and people would always wave and smile at me because I was exceedingly small.
Right.
And I would duck my head. I wouldn't make eye contact. I was so shy. And that went on until the summer when I was 9 or 10, I think. I went to stay with some cousins and they had a friend over, and this friend was so gregarious and happy, a huge smile on her face. And as soon as she came in, they introduced her to me, you know, this is our cousin Cindy. Hi, Cindy. I'm so glad you're here. And she was just bubbly and happy. And I remember at that young age of 9 or 10 thinking to myself, this is better. She's not shy at all.
Right.
She seems like she's having a better time than me. Right? And like I have this aha moment of like, yeah, I don't really like this being shy. And I decided right then, I'm done with that.
Good for you.
I'm done with being shy. And I just started emulating her. I mean, I only knew her for that afternoon. But after that, when someone would say hello to me, I would smile. I would say hello. And very quickly, it was very easy. And when I read all of this now, I think about that. I want it to always be this easy to tell a new story. But I really stepped into that new identity of I was no longer a shy person. I was now, you know, so it's like, okay, we can do it. It's possible.
Not only is it possible, you actually basically took back your I am. I mean, that's what he's referring to, the I am. You took it back in a big way. You made it all yours again.
Right. And so it's just that recognition that at that time, of course, being, you know, a 10-year-old, I knew nothing about this theory.
Right.
Right. On paper. I guess maybe I did because I figured it out. But what I'm saying is no one taught that. No one said you don't have to be shy. You can be, you know, more open. And looking back, I realized I did exactly this. If I can do it as a 10-year-old, I can do it now.
That's true. that's certainly true. Now I'm curious what you think about this, because a lot of people talk about, particularly in the woo-woo circles, talk about how when we're very young, we're still fairly connected to where we came from. Over time, we get socialized away from it, and so we start to let go of it and forget about it. But I'm going to presume that at that age, you still had some connection. Do you think perhaps that connection was influencing you, that it helped influence your choice to just take back the power?
Right. That's why I said I knew nothing about this in theory on paper. Yeah. Like nobody taught it to me, but I think maybe I remembered that I had the power to do that. I remember being very confident of it, of just say, it was like, oh, that looks like more fun. I'm just going to do that. I don't have to do this. I don't have to be this. The way I would say it now, when I have the same recognition, is, what is this story I'm telling about myself?
Yeah, right.
I don't need to tell this story, right? So I changed it. And looking back, I want to always remember that story because it helps me recognize, hey, look, this was easy peasy for me. When I was 10 years old, I just did this. Or 9, however old I was. And I can do it now. I can step into another I am story.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Our words are very powerful. Very powerful. I am is that reality to which, whatever happens, we must turn for an explanation of the phenomena of life. It is I am's concept of itself that determines the form and scenery of its existence. Everything depends upon its attitude towards itself. That which it will not affirm as true of itself cannot awaken in its world.
Interesting.
That is your con. Yeah. That's a powerful statement.
It is.
Everything depends upon its attitude towards itself. I remember years and years ago, somebody said to me that the universe was just a manifestation of our love relationship with ourself. And I thought, you are out of your mind. Apparently, whatever I had when I was 10, by the time I was 17 or 18, I had moved away from it.
Apparently, yes.
I heard this person say this, and I thought, you are nutcase.
Hey, we were all nutcases at one point.
I remembered it, and I was like, she was right.
Oh, that's funny. But the second part, though, the second part of that statement is what was stopping me, because it said, that which it will not affirm as true of itself cannot awaken in its world, which is a kind of an inverse saying way of saying whatever we do affirm is true of ourself can and does awaken in this world.
Yes. Yeah. That's it. And it's a good thing to remember. We were doing that a few months ago. We were taking statements and we were
inverting them. Right. Them. Yeah.
Yeah. So what we can affirm as true will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can't affirm it as true, it cannot awaken in this world. That's powerful.
And it occurs to me that because of that fact, now that he has clarified something for me, since something can only awaken when I affirm that it's true, it means, well, first of all, everything that comes into my life that I like, I had to affirm it was true before it would show up. And secondly, it means there's like a built-in, I don't know what you call it, a reward system, I guess. For every time that I affirm something, I get more of my world showing up. That's pretty cool when you look at it that way, because now all of a sudden I've got built-in incentive.
I think of how many times people deflect a compliment, right? Like somebody says, you are so good at that. Oh, no, I'm not really that good. So-and-so is much better at this than I am. But we're not affirming it.
Right.
We have so many opportunities to affirm good things about ourselves all the time. And that's one of the ways is that when someone gives us some kind of a compliment or says something about us, and if we deflect it, it's because we don't have that. We haven't yet grasped and accepted and feel confident about
that
part of our story. Right.
Exactly. So, yeah. Yeah.
So perk up to when people say, you've got this. Yes, I do.
And perk up to yourself, especially when they're saying it, because they're saying it about you.
Yeah. So let's see. That is, he says, your concept of yourself, such as I am strong, I am secure, I am loved, determines the world in which you live. In other words, when you say, I am a man, I am a father, I am an American, you are not defining different I ams, you are defining different concepts or arrangements of the one cause substance, the one I am. But that sounds like what you were saying at the very beginning of learning this concept, that we're all one.
And you can tell this was
and
written.
All those things that we define ourselves to be, they're all just different facets of the same one.
And you can tell this was written some 70 years ago or so, because we would politically correct change it to, I am a father or a mother, I am an American, I am a man or a woman.
Well, what I picture is he's using his own statements here because he's a man.
True. That's true.
But these at the top, I am strong, I am secure, I am loved. You know, they sound like very, very classic affirmations.
They do.
That are written to, it's like mirror work, right?
Exactly.
It's like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like something you'd read in the Law of Attraction Change My Life group, which you do. You see that kind of thing all the time. Absolutely.
I love that he says, even in the phenomena of nature, if the tree were articulate, it would say, I am a tree, an apple tree, a fruitful tree.
Oh, by the way, we had a comment from one of our listeners on that Facebook group, the Law of Attraction Changed My Life group. Jeffrey, in response to what you were talking about, compliments and being able to take compliments, he says, I see that in my practice all the time with clients, compliments deflected. So, yeah, affirming what you said.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, we can recognize, I mean, it happens all the time. And the other thing people deflect is like someone giving them something besides a compliment, doing something nice for them, or give. I had lunch with a friend yesterday, and she was asking me what was going on in my business, and I told her about this new product that I had created, and she said, "Oh yeah." She said, "I think I heard something about that." And she said, "I'm going to go buy one." I said, "Oh, I'll just send it to you." And she said, "No, I said I want to buy it." And I said, well, I will give you one. You see this little fight going back and forth. And she said, I really want to buy it. And mm-hmm. I said, okay, I know better than to tell money to go away.
Right, exactly.
I know better than to tell money. Like, yeah, no. And so I got home from, I said, thank you very mm-hmm. much. I appreciate that. And I got home and I saw that she bought it. And I said, okay, we're good.
Very good.
But that happens a lot. If people say, oh, I'll pick up the tab for lunch. Oh, no.
Yeah, the fight, right. Well, the fight over the check.
Right. So I learned at some point to just say thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Just like when someone compliments me, I want to be able to say thank you. When someone says, let me pick up the check, thank you.
Absolutely.
Nothing fighting over it, because fighting over it is you telling abundance, you telling gifts, you telling, you know, goodness, you telling blessings. No. I don't need that. I'll do it myself.
And we don't think of it that way. But you're right. That's exactly what it is. It's not saying yes, it's saying no. I think there's a piece of us deep down that says, you know, if I fight for the tab, I'm affirming to myself that I have the wherewithal to pay this bill. But that's really not what we're doing at all. And the sooner we recognize that, the better we're off.
Yeah. Well, say yes and allow someone to bless you.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you want to affirm your worth in that way, you know, pay it forward.
Right.
When you go get, pay for someone else's table.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a wonderful thing to do, you know, is to just pick up the tab for someone you don't know or someone you do know, but to say to the server, you know, the person in front of me or behind me or wherever they are, you know, it's like, let me pick up their tab too. That way you get the blessings coming in. You know, money is an energy that has to flow in and out. So we all think we want lots of money to flow in, but we need to let flow out too, or it gets stagnant.
It's a good point. Right, yeah. I think it's a very valid point, and I'm glad you brought it up, because it's a good reminder. Especially we have done a few events now where the event is about people being frustrated about money not showing up in their lives, and we've got another one actually scheduled for I think it's this Friday, maybe it's next Friday. It's next Friday, not this Friday. On the relationship between the law of attraction and energy and attracting money into your life. But we forget that it is a two-way flow. If you're only focusing on the one side, you're basically telling the universe, I don't want any of it to flow out. I only want it to flow in, which basically right. means you're not going to be able to spend the darn stuff once you get it.
Something that I always try to do too is if something, especially if it's something unexpected, because we've all had this happen, no matter where we are financially, when you get an unexpected bill, you know, you suddenly have to buy, an appliance breaks down or something. It's like,
right.
oh no,
right.
you know, we have to go spend this chunk of change on whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I always like to remind myself that when I spend money, that I'm blessing someone else. I'm putting money back into the economy. Someone has a job because I'm spending that money. Someone
right.
it's benefiting someone else. However it goes out.
That's one of the most potent statements of economics I've ever heard. Most of the economic statements I've heard are from economists, you know, from people writing about economics. That's probably one of the best ones I've ever heard. That it's not even an economy until it's flowing. And it's true.
So it's like we get to all do our part.
Yeah.
Sometimes it hurts.
It doesn't have to hurt.
No, but when we remind ourselves that, no, you know, that's another story, right? I mean, and people would agree with us. We mm-hmm. said, oh, no, this happened and I had to, you know, pay out this money that was unexpected. Oh, how awful, right? We all can groan about it together. But if we want to take the perspective that we're actually, this is an opportunity that we're blessing the economy. And, you know, what is that saying about nature abhorring a vacuum? You know, money flows out, more money will come back in. It just flows. Economy works that way. Economics work that way. So we can remember that when we have
absolutely
an outflux. And remember to say thank you and let people bless you when they're trying to.
Our listener Jeffrey has another comment. He says, when someone compliments me, I say, tell everyone.
Yes. Oh, I love that. You know what? That is the, thank you. Thank you. I'm going to accept that as a gift, because the next time someone tells me that, you know, I'm a great coach or something, I'm going to say, tell everyone.
Tell everyone. Yay.
Tell everyone. Thank you.
That's good. That's really good.
Awesome. That's wonderful. Okay. So where did I, we talked about, okay, with the apple tree told us it was fruitful. And I believe that nature is articulate and it is saying, I am a tree, an apple tree, a fruitful tree. When you know that consciousness is the one and only reality, conceiving itself to be something good, bad, or indifferent, and becoming that which it conceived itself to be, you are free from the tyranny of second causes, free from the belief that there are causes outside of your own mind that can affect your life.
So that's what a second cause is. A second cause is a cause outside of your own mind. In other words, listening to something other than what you know to be true and deep inside.
Right. So that's really interesting that he calls it the tyranny of second causes.
Yes. Yes. I can see
and
that.
It makes so much sense because if I believe that all of these things are happening to me and causing effect in my life, then I'm not at cause. I'm at effect and I'm living at effect, meaning I have no power over any of it.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
And so if that's the case, when I recognize that I do have power, that it's just my consciousness, when you know that consciousness is the one and only reality at that point, then we're free from the tyranny of second causes. And I think it's interesting that he chooses the word tyranny because it's a really powerful word.
It evokes a very clear image of being enslaved to something.
Yes. That you don't have any power over, right? Very powerful. In the state of consciousness of the individual is found the explanation of the phenomena of life. We talked about that. We've been talking about that, about the state that we are in. So he says the state of consciousness is found in the state of consciousness is found the explanation of the phenomena of life. If man's concept of himself were different, everything in his world would be different. His concept of himself being what it is, everything in his world must be as it is.
He just described everyone who's ever explored the law of attraction for the first time.
the aha moment of, yep. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Exactly. Thus
it is abundantly clear that there is only one I am. And you are that I am. And while I am is infinite, you, by your concept of yourself, are displaying only a limited aspect of the infinite I am. And then he ends this chapter, at least I think this is the end of the chapter.
It looks like it to me.
He ends this chapter with a quote from The Chambered Nautilus by Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr. It says, build thee more stately mansions, O my soul, as the swift seasons roll. Leave thy low-vaulted past. Let each new temple, nobler than the last, shut thee from heaven with a dome more vast, till thou at length art free, leaving thine outgrown shell by life's unresting sea. That's beautiful. Because when you realize what he's saying, it's like, you can just build it as big as you want it.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? If we're infinite, if we're unlimited in what we can create for ourselves. And I don't think that's always, it doesn't start outside of ourselves. It starts within ourselves. So when we can understand that part, then the rest of it, of our outer experience just happens. It just unfolds. It just gets created by our subconscious or by the cause substance that he's talking about.
It's funny too, because while you were reading that little poem by Holmes, I found myself noticing how I was putting limits on it. Because he talks about build thee more stately mansions, oh my soul. And I'm thinking to myself, but I don't want to live in a stately mansion. I just limited it, right? I just said, no, I just want to live in a smaller house. And we do that all the time without even realizing it very often. In this case, I noticed it. I recognized it. And like you said, it's more of a metaphor than, you know, well, actually, you have to go live in a stately mansion. But what did I do? I took that phrase, and because it didn't quite resonate with what I had in mind, I turned it into something that basically said, nope, I have not. And we do that all the time. It's crazy how often we do that.
We do it all the time. We do it all the time.
Yeah.
And so it's good to, but, you know, here's the thing, is that when we become aware, that's when we start catching it.
Mm-hmm.
And at first we catch it all the time, and it's like, I did it again. But it changes once we stay aware. First we catch it all the time after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Then we start catching it in the middle of whatever it is.
Yeah, that's
cool.
And
then we start noticing it before, oops, almost said, until there's a process that unfolds where pretty soon we do it less
mm-hmm.
and less.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're going for. I'm watching the time. We've got time. Shall we actually get to a second chapter today?
Sure. That's, you know, we, all of a sudden we were stuck in that one chapter of the previous book for like three shows. You know, I think we're kind of reversing the trend here. I think we're getting into the flow of the thing. So yeah, sure. Let's go for chapter two. Why not?
Let's see. What's it called? It is called consciousness. It is only by a change of consciousness, by actually changing your concept of yourself, that you can build more stately mansions. The manifestations of higher and higher concepts. By manifesting is meant experiencing the results of these concepts in your world. I think this is funny because this book was written, I think, in 1949?
Okay.
Let's see. Which one are we doing?
Power of Awareness.
Power of Awareness, 1952.
52, okay.
And in law of attraction circles and with Esther and Jerry Hicks and the teachings of Abraham, we hear the word manifest all the time.
All the time.
Right? I mean, I actually had somebody say to me, oh wow, you are such an awesome manifester. And I thought, that's so funny because even 10 years ago, I think I would have been, what? Like, it just wasn't a word that got used. And so I think it's funny that Neville used it in 1952, and now he's explaining what he means by it. It's
mm-hmm.
like, by manifesting is meant experiencing the results of these concepts in your world. It is of vital importance to understand clearly just what consciousness is. The reason lies in the fact that consciousness is the one and only reality. It is the first and only cause substance of the phenomena of life. Nothing has existence for man save through the consciousness he has of it. Therefore, it is to consciousness you must turn, for it's the only foundation on which the phenomena of life can be explained. If we accept the idea of a first cause, it would follow that the evolution of that cause could never result in anything foreign to itself. That is, if the first cause substance is light, all its evolutions, fruits, and manifestations would remain light. The first cause substance being consciousness, all its evolutions, fruits, and phenomena must remain consciousness. All that could be observed would be a higher or lower form or variation of the same thing. In other words, if your consciousness is the only reality, it must also be the only substance. Ooh.
So now we're tying in that concept that he raised before, the cause substance, right? This is where the substance part comes into it.
And so that's really interesting to think of it that way that he just spoke about it, is that if your consciousness is the only reality, then it's also the only substance. So everything that you see around you in your world, everything you experience is all a result. It's of your consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Consequently, what appears to you as circumstances, conditions, and even material objects is really only the product of your own consciousness. Nature, then, as a thing or a complex of things external to your mind, must be rejected.
Okay, now we have minds boggling all over the world.
Right?
Because personally, I don't even want to get rid of it. I love nature. I don't want to reject nature. No, this is one of the best things in the world.
We're not rejecting nature. We're just rejecting the idea that it's all external to our mind.
Ah, yes. Okay. Okay, now I feel much better. Thank you.
And we've talked about that before. We've talked about everything's all in our head.
Mm-hmm.
Literally. Our consciousness. And so it's important we recognize how big the inside of our head is, I guess.
Every time we run into this particular concept, I keep thinking about the last book of the Harry Potter series. We mentioned Harry Potter before. In the last book, he meets up with Dumbledore in his mind. And he has a conversation with him because he's just been killed by Voldemort, which means Voldemort's soul that was attached to him got knocked out. And he's still in a knocked out state himself, but he's having this conversation with Dumbledore. And at the end of the conversation, before they part company, Harry says, "Professor, is this all happening inside my head or is this real?" And Dumbledore replies, "Of course it's happening inside your head, but what on earth makes you think that it's not real?" That's what I think about every time I hear this concept being discussed, that everything happens because we are inventing it in our heads. And it's such an important concept.
Is it all in my head or is it real? What's the difference?
There's no difference.
Of course it's real. Yeah. So maybe J.K. Rowling was a Neville reader.
She was very well read. She drew from a lot of sources, so I wouldn't be surprised if she was. Yeah.
As within, so without. As above, so below. I mean, all of these concepts, right, are still right here. You and your environment cannot be regarded as existing separately. You and your world are one.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not rejecting the things that are outside of us. We're just rejecting the idea that they're completely external to our mind. Therefore, you must turn from the objective appearance of things to the subjective center of things, your consciousness. If you truly desire to know the cause of the phenomena of life and how to use this knowledge to realize your fondest dreams. In the midst of the apparent contradictions, antagonisms, and contrasts of your life, there's only one principle at work, only your consciousness operating. Difference does not consist in variety of substance, but in variety of arrangement of the same cause substance, your consciousness. The world moves with motiveless necessity. By this is meant that it has no motive of its own, but it's under the necessity of manifesting your concept, the arrangement of your mind, and your mind is always arranged in the image of all you believe and consent to as true.
Interesting phrase, the world moves with motiveless necessity.
I was thinking about the idea we talked about with the subconscious and the conscious. And how the subconscious loves us. In the metaphor he put to us, it was that the subconscious loves us with an unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
It just does what we ask of it. It doesn't, mm-hmm. It never argues.
Right.
It doesn't have a motive.
Yeah.
It doesn't say, "Oh no, no, don't tell that story about yourself. Don't say you're poor, then no money will come in. Mm-hmm. Don't say you're sick, you won't feel well." No, it just says, "Okay."
Right.
So when we say, "I'm broke," it says, "Okay. I'm unwell. All right."
It's the genie in the secret. Your wish is my command.
Right. Right. So the world moves with motiveless necessity. And how does the world move? I mean, that's why I connect it, because we've already figured out that it's our subconscious that's moving it all.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no motive there. It just has to move. It has to fulfill our wish, so to speak, right? Or maybe it's not always a wish, but our statements, our concept of ourself.
Well, that's an interesting question. If you want it, it's a wish. If you don't want it, is it still a wish? That's an interesting question.
Yeah. By this is meant that it has no motive of its own, but it's under the necessity of manifesting your concept, the arrangement of your mind. Excuse me. And your mind is always arranged in the image of all you believe and consent to as true. There was a word further back that you brought out. It wasn't consent to as true. It was affirm.
Mm-hmm.
That you, whatever you can't affirm as being true, it cannot awaken in your world. I think it was something like that. The rich man, poor man, beggar man, or thief are not all different minds, but different arrangements of the same mind, in the same sense that a piece of steel, when magnetized, differs not in substance from its demagnetized state, but in the arrangement and order of its molecules. A single electron revolving in a specified orbit constitutes the unit of magnetism. When a piece of steel or anything else is demagnetized, the revolving electrons have not stopped. Therefore, the magnetism has not gone out of existence. There's only a rearrangement of the particles so that they produce no outside or perceptible effect. When particles are arranged at random, mixed up in all directions, the substance is said to be demagnetized. But when particles are marshaled in ranks so the number of them face in one direction, the substance is a magnet. Magnetism is not generated. It is displayed.
Wow. The metaphor gets pretty deep there.
Health, wealth, beauty, genius are not created. They're only manifested by the arrangement of your mind. That is, by your concept of yourself. And your concept of yourself is all that you accept and consent to as true. What you consent to can only be discovered by an uncritical observation of your reactions to life. I love this because this is exactly what we were talking about, our reaction to a compliment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
Right?
Exactly.
Someone, he says health, wealth, beauty, genius. Someone says, oh, you're so smart. Oh, no, not really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
That's our concept of ourself reacting.
That's
and
right.
We're not consenting. It's like, I'm not going to consent to that statement. I'm not really that smart. Instead of saying, thank you, tell everyone.
And so that's because we don't affirm it, it doesn't actually show up.
Your reactions reveal where you live psychologically, and where you live psychologically determines how you live here in the outer visible world. The importance of this in your daily life should be immediately apparent. The basic nature of the primal cause is consciousness. Therefore, the ultimate substance of all things is consciousness.
It's
wow.
Funny. Yeah.
This was powerful.
Well, it's amazing, too. We actually got through two chapters in one day. That's something. Considering what
yes,
our usual pace is.
Tell everyone.
Tell everyone. Absolutely. Oh, but this is just really interesting in that what we're investigating something here from a very philosophical viewpoint. I mean, this is kind of airy-fairy in the way he describes this stuff. And I think it's because of the nature of the thing that we're talking about. When you're talking about I am, that's going to be something that you can't just put a brick on. It's just going to be...
It's nebulous.
Very nebulous. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's done... I guess what I'm trying to say is I studied philosophy when I was in college, and this is better philosophy than anything I ever studied in college. Because this feels better.
I love philosophy. Yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff.
It is very good stuff. So... Okay, well, we've done it. We got everything in within 1 hour. I don't want to go too far because if I go too far over an hour, then I drive people crazy. So I'm going to cut it off short here. But before we do, how does somebody reach out to the wonderful Cindy Chavez in case they need a little personal assistance with this stuff?
They can reach out to me at my website, CindieChavez.com, CindyChavez.com. I would love to hear from you. Just give me a shout. Give me a wave. Find me somewhere, social media, same name, Cindy Chavez. You can find me there.
And speaking of social media, yeah, and thank you also to those who were following along in the live stream and Facebook and sharing their comments.
Yes.
We love that. And keep
thank
sharing
so
those
much.
Each time we do these. You can watch on the events calendar to see when we're coming on each time to talk about Neville. And I can't hardly wait for the next time, which unfortunately is going to be next week. But fortunately, we're going to have 3 more days of it. It's going to be good stuff.
Yes.
So I will see you then. I will see you then, and we'll see all of you as well next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.